Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Bench Units podcast. I'm joined as always by Mark. How you doing, Mark?
I'm going good, man. How are you? Are you
Yeah, not
excited
too
for your
bad,
wheels
thank
to
you.
arrive? Are
Pardon?
you excited for your wheels to arrive mid-podcast?
No, I'm not excited to have to edit out a doorbell ringing. I'm probably just not going to bother. But yeah, so we're also joined by a returning guest, someone who's back after earning quite a promotion since he last joined us 2 years ago. One of the most polarizing guests we've ever had, if only because he was a massive hit with anyone who speaks English natively and not a hit with anyone who struggled to understand what he was saying. He's an undefeated head coach following Australia's performance at the AOZ earlier this year, punching a ticket to Paris. Anyone who watched that was reminded how growing the hair out can look great as long as you're not Mark Schofield. And he's here to talk a little bit about that. I'm looking forward to the reportage, like a Roman emperor watching gladiators battle it out from afar. We are glad to be joined by Brad Ness. Brad, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. Thanks, fellas, and thanks for the invite to come back on the number one podcast around the world, if I can say that. And yeah, no, always a pleasure to have a chat with you, fellas. It's interesting to see what gets generated out of this weekly hour.
Thanks,
Yeah, man.
man. I don't think we're number one anymore, but there's a couple of podcasts out there that are doing good work.
They're just imposters, mate. I'll have their
Yeah, there you
back.
go. You're too right.
We've got our soundbite for the episode anyway. We'll put that on the Instagram. So yeah, Brad, for people who don't know, you're joining us from Blankenberge in Belgium at the moment. So thank you for carving out time of a pretty hectic week for you and the Rollers. But the big news is since you last joined us, you have been made the head coach of the Australian men. We were going to speak to you going back a little bit, kind of pre-season when you guys had your pre-season tournament in Julianova, but we couldn't make the time work and whatever. So obviously a lot's changed since then. As James alluded to, you guys put in a hell of a performance at the AOZ tournament, and you've saved yourself a lot of headaches for this kind of middle portion of the year just there. But we're going to just go back for people who've not maybe kept up with as much. So when you joined us last, you were in your assistant coach role and you were running kind of the Perth and Western Australia division of some of the elite rollers training, but you're now fully fledged rollers head coach. So how did that come about? And was it because the powers that be heard you on our last episode with you and they thought, man, this guy actually really knows what he's talking about? Because that would be great publicity for us.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. It definitely helped being on bench. It was 2 years ago already.
Yeah, 2 years,
Unbelievable.
man.
look, there's no secret. I suppose the program had the Australian men's program had been in decline. For a while. Not, I mean, we had a little bit of success in 2018, but sort of post 2014, we've been slowly slipping backwards. And yeah, I think it was just a combination of a few things, and it got to a point that post World Cup, the management decided that they probably needed to have a bit of a change, and they canvassed the group, I suppose, and I don't think it was unanimous that they approached me, but my name came up enough for them to at least asked me if I was interested. And I mean, that's what you do this for, like who wouldn't be? And so I put my hand up, but it was only after I'd spoken to a number of the athletes as well to say, like, I mean, I bleed for the Rollers, and as a player, as a coach, and if I wasn't going to be the right fit, I certainly didn't want to take the job on if that's what the players didn't want. I just think the player unit deserved to be, heading in the right direction. And if I wasn't the right person, they didn't think I was, then I certainly wouldn't have taken it on. But as it's turned out, it's been an interesting sort of 6 months or so already. It's time's flying, and
Yeah, you certainly you can't argue with the results so far at least. So I think it's an interesting one because I think there's always a temptation, right, in the when looking for a new coach, there's nothing seemingly more glamorous than, oh, let's bring in a legend who used to play for the team, and he'll resonate with, the guys who are here now, and they'll, if they don't listen to this guy, they won't listen to anybody, kind of thing. But a lot of teams go that route in a lot of sports, and rarely, it is not a ready-made formula for success, let's put it that way. So the role you left behind to fill it was kind of the assistant coach who's been there, done it, is relatable to the players, while maybe the head coach is slightly more distant, tactical, whatever. So you brought Brett Stibnors in as your assistant coach. Was that something you really wanted? Was that something he got of himself? Did you guys see yourselves as a duo that you could make it work and have the right, who, I take it that's a bad cop dynamic, right, between you guys?
No, look, I'm filling in on saying, I reckon when I spoke to you last time, I might not have actually been assistant coach. And this is why culture's king, and I'm big on culture. When I was in the team, and I was, when I was captain, I mean, the big thing that I tried to do that was make sure that our culture was red hot, and because that's what drives it. And if you don't have that unity of the team, you're not going to be composed when you need to be. So, before the World Cup, I actually got omitted from that. So I've been in the role since '97. That's when I started, when I made the squad to try and go for the '98 World. So to all of a sudden be told that I wouldn't be going to the World Cup as the lead assistant was a bit of a shock. And yeah, I was pretty dirty on it, to be honest. And the reasoning, there was a couple of reasonings why, which I sort of didn't buy at the time. And but through my other role working at the Institute of Sport, I'd been put on a course, mental performance coaching. And yeah, I sat down, and I probably coached with a heavy handle when I was in there, and I'm a bit of old school, obviously having Murray as a Murray Trezor as a mentor. It washed off on me a bit. So yeah,
It
the
will.
mannerisms, I suppose, of I've been very lucky. I've been, coached under by Craig Friday, Ben Ettridge, and Murray Trezor. So, yeah, I've been lucky to have those guys as mentor coaches. But yeah, the fit in me at the time, the boys didn't think I was a the right fit, so I wasn't going to be going to the World Cup. So that sort of hit home, and I just went away, and then it wasn't until I went up to Queensland and I did the first day, and it was like someone hit me with a baseball bat. They're just talking about, like, if you get up into the grill of a player and you give them a good reaming, and it can take 6 months before your relationship gets back to how it was before you did that, before you had that confrontation. I'm not saying I'm completely changed my ways, but it really, that just that one part of that course, and it was a 3 day course, and I've done several of them in the series. And yeah, it just got me thinking. And yeah, the world's changed, and people's changed, and the new generations are coming through are different, de definitely different, and everyone responds differently. So that dynamic of it changed. And when we come to Blankensberg last time, both the head coach and the assistant coach at the time couldn't make it due to different illnesses, and I got thrown in the deep end. So I went from being booted from the team to then, coming on as the coach. And the boys saw a big change in me, and I suppose it was because I didn't have any pressure whether I performed or not. It was a caretaker role for a tour to, 2 weeks to Europe. So, but that really, it started all to hit home, that the rapport changed between myself and the players to how I, come across. And so that's been the big change. And then to answer your question about Brett, especially on, I don't know what happens in the Premier League in England and that, but especially in Aussie rules, a lot of players that have played for a long time normally retire, and then a lot of them get jobs in some form, whether it's a forwards coach or a backs coach, whatever it might be. And I didn't see why there was a problem in, I didn't think Brett needed, or Sticky as we call him, I don't didn't think he needed the separation from the group, because the way he sees the game is really different to myself and to a lot of other people. And just what he picks up in opposition teams is great. So to me, it was a no-brainer. It was a part that I needed for him to fill. And then the other coach was Darren Alley, and he's from Byron Bay, which is like the Zen capital of the world. And he's also doesn't have a huge wheelchair basketball background, but he has a big basketball background. But the thing him is the way he he like, yeah, it's almost like I've got Brett on one side and Darren on the other. And Daz is the calm one that, he would quite often say, "Hey, Brett, when I'm on going on a rant, you might want to reframe that and deliver it this way to the fellas." And having him as sort of like a mentor to me on tour has been huge. It's just kept the group, the harmony and the culture of the group ticking in the right direction.
You mentioning Byron Bay there just made me laugh because there's probably more people from Belfast in Byron Bay than there are in Belfast at this point. I don't know if you know that, but it's like the Irish capital is going to move from Dublin to somewhere in Australia at some point over the next 5 years.
Wow.
That's really interesting to me that obviously your two assistant coaches right now are someone who's not only from within wheelchair basketball, but like a teammate that you've had over the years, and obviously has gone through the same stuff as you, has been coached by Murray as well and gone through all of that. And then you've got someone from within basketball but outside. Do you think that balance of like inside and outside influences how you think about things these days? Do you think that's a good balance to have? Because there's a load of guys that would come up and just bring people on who they liked and who think the same as them and kind of keep going in the same direction. Do you think it's valuable to have the outside perspective too?
Yeah, 100%. One of our parts of our values or what goes into our group is challenge and expect to be challenged. So if I can't have coaches that challenge my way of thinking or challenge the way I deliver, etc., then I'm not going to get the best out of myself and I'm not going to get the best out of the group. So I think that was really important. And also to have someone that just had a clean slate that was coming in with no hadn't been in part of it before. So his thoughts were clean, and the best thing about Daz is he calls a spade. So you get the message delivered, and so does Brett. So I suppose the good thing is Brett's looking after our under 23, so we're continuing that trend where one of the assistant looks after the 23, so that the style of play gets passed down. And we're trying to keep a national program in that sense. So yeah, it's been so far been good. Touch wood.
The idea, just to hear you say that, the idea of someone that another Aussie would refer to as a guy that calls a spade is a level of upfrontness that nobody else in the world can begin to comprehend. You alluded to it a second ago, Brad. It's been so 10 years since Australia's last gold medal, which was 2014. It's been 8 years since your last appearance as a player, I believe, which was 2016 in Rio. Rocky few years since then, and obviously you've been around and you've now taken on this role as coach, and kind of I think everyone who comes in as head coach, maybe the first thing you need to establish is okay, what was working and what wasn't working. So having been around in the lead up, as the assistant and whatever, did you come in with an idea of what the low-hanging fruit was, I guess, in terms of, hey, we need to fix this up today, literally, and then we can start to build on that from tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, look, everything's changing, right? So there's a lot of data analysis coming into sport now across the board, and it's in wheelchair. And so one of the things we did is we tore the Tokyo Games apart, and then we tore the World Cup apart, and it's hard to see some trends that were coming through from both those ones. And one of the biggest ones was that, we were number one in steals and getting up the floor, but we were ninth in sorry guys we were ninth in sorry, it's just room service coming in trying to clean your room. Don't worry, boys, I'll sleep in an unmade bed for you guys tonight.
Oh,
No, the biggest thing for us was that we were getting the ball, but we were ninth in transition, in points. So yeah, we there was some definitely some really easy fixes there. I mean, it was, we started, you saw how much we score, like we just had to try and find ways to, get up the floor and get the ball in the hole. So there was a couple of things that we started to look at the start. And also the big thing was the culture. We had a lot of bottom lips dragging along the ground, right? We had to fix that. We had to bring the fun back to playing. And, we just wanted to, get people happy and enjoying being a part of it, which was, that hadn't been there probably for a couple of years.
sure.
So when you came in, you did what Mark has described as bitten a probably slightly overdue bullet and started to bring some of the younger guys in and integrate them more certainly into playing, if not just into the squad in general. Why do you think it was the right time to do that particularly, or was it just a like coaches always come in and bring young guys along? But why did you think the new blood was sort of necessary on your way in the door?
Look, we've got 13 here, and the 13th guy here is Jaylen Brown. He's started to play 40 odd minutes for Julianova now in Italy, and so we brought him in again to put a bit of pressure on and see where he's at. There's a couple of things. One, I mean, you got to preach what you took. You got to practice what you preach. And I go out talking to organisations, etc. And one of the things that we used to one of our core pieces of the culture was to give everyone a voice and give everyone opportunity to, depending on, didn't matter if they were a rookie or not. And if you go back to our successful teams, like 2014 World Cup, Tommy O'Neill was a 16, 17-year-old. 2008, Dylan Alcock was a 17-year-old. 2004, when we lost to Canada in the final, Shaunie Norris breaks into the starting five in the gold medal game as a 17-year-old. Like, the history of the Rollers has been that in our, a lot of our major big tournaments, we've had, 17-year-old, 18-year-old kids playing and taking the game on. And the thing with it, like, I always talk about Dylan. Like, Dylan Alcock's just such a character, and he's a, the guy's an amazing personality. And if we'd sort of squashed him at the start, who knows what would have happened to him as a person and also as a player. So one of the things that I was like, we had these players there, and it was like, well, they're going to make mistakes, but we've got to trust that they're going to go out there and take the game on like young blokes do. And it was just a matter of trying to, not so much control it, but harness that, the ability. And I like you Ethan Laird's a special character, right? And he's as a two, like, that's just so valuable having someone like that. So we had to find a way to get them in and get them on the court and get them playing. And the other thing was too, that you guys probably would have seen, like, we used to make wholesale changes when we had subs, and that was really upsetting to the group. So we've tried now to limit the amount of players that sub in and out. And we're really trying to, formulate a holistic group of 12 rather than, completely different change-ups.
Yeah, because I always remember there was a point where you guys used to run, obviously you had the 4-3-3s and Yannick lineup around 2018, and the second lineup in was always
Three,
two
four,
four
two.
fives, a three and two ones, and it was just bomb squad, like just sticky in there raining threes. I think Tristan came in on the floor as well. And I always loved that from afar, but like just me loving it from watching it on the outside doesn't mean it's good for the squad. And like I always thought it's always interesting when teams have like very specific rotations. Like there's a couple of national teams that do it, like no matter what happens, 7 minutes into the first quarter, these guys are coming on, and it's like, well, someone could be as hot as they've ever been, but they look at the scorers table and you're like, oh yeah, it's my time. But I think there's some guys that probably benefit from it, but like it's interesting that you find culturally that it was like it's maybe like upsetting people and taking people out of their rhythm and this, that and the other. But that's interesting to
We
me.
found there was guys that didn't want to go on because they'd be subbing out the bloke that had the hot hand,
Yeah,
and
exactly. Yeah.
they'd be like, "I don't want to go on," and be like, "You got to go on." So no, we've made some changes in that, and we're trying to, and you know what? It's like you build the, you get the harmony or the vibe going in the group, then you don't have people worrying about whether they played, 20 or 5 or whatever. Like, they're just happy that you get the W. And I think that really showed in at the AOZ tournament, especially. Like, if you saw the lineup I went with the last couple of minutes, everyone thought I was mad. But it got us the job done, and we won. And we had Luke Popple out there, so it was like, I don't think anyone saw it coming. So it's like, it was just one of those things where we had to create the trust in the group, to be able to want to do this, and we're getting there. It's going to take some time, but it's a good start.
And just last point on the young guys before we talk about the AOZ specifically, but obviously we've mentioned it. You kind of use this opportunity of you coming in to move these guys along the pathway a little bit. Presumably, it's a little bit self-fulfilling, right? Because if you'd have been considering taking the job and you'd have looked at a development pathway full of athletes that you didn't really think had it in them, the job becomes a lot less enticing at that point, right? If the cupboards were bare and there's no talent coming through, you're probably not signing on for, let's coach this aging group for the next however many years and continue to, keep the wheels spinning in place, I guess. But there's not a shortage of Italian of talent in your guys' group, especially, you mentioned Ethan, you mentioned Jalen, you've got Tom McHugh who's killing it in Germany. And Frank Pinder's the other one who's much younger than I realized he was.
Yeah, Frankie's amazing. He's a machine, Frank. And like, you'd never like. I mean, we're so fortunate enough to have Yannick Blair, and then Sammy White, who's just an out and out veteran now, and become very good at his craft. But then, Frank's gone from acquiring his disability at a 16, 17, I think he was, and then in sort of 5, 6 years, just burst onto the world stage now. And put pressure on Yannick to make sure Yannick's playing well, and to have 3 1-pointers like that, two of them being very dynamic, really helps out our cause. Tom McHugh is your classic pig, right? They just take another couple of years after everyone else to hit their straps. But you got to one thing you got to you got to reward effort and sacrifice. And Jalen jumped on a plane and got over to Europe. Tommy's done the same thing. Ethan's looking to follow. Frankie's been in my DTE in Australia in Perth, training 5, 6 days a week. And the other one is older, but Phil Evans is coming into it now as another 2-pointer. He's really turned his physicality and that around, and has bought into the system, and is understanding now he's got an opportunity to maybe get to a games, but he's going to have to do the hard work. So when I first took over, one of the very first things I said is that, guys, if you want minutes, you got to get better than the person in front of you. If you want to make the team, you got to get better than the person in front of you. And I've got two other coaches that are going to call it straight. So we're going to be very transparent, and you just need to get better. And if you're not willing to do the work, then don't expect to get minutes. And that was pretty much straight up. And the young fellas have taken it on board and given it a go. And just sort of very fortunate, like you said, to have those young dynamic players coming through.
Yeah, that's such a big thing, and it sounds kind of harsh and straight up, but every wheelchair basketball player in the world would rather know why they didn't make a team or why they weren't playing than because you hear like if you're unlucky, you've had the opposite where you've not made the cut and you've got like a no, you're doing great, don't worry about it, and then team comes out and you're not on it, and you're like, all right, cool, like maybe if I was told why X, Y, or Z, I maybe would have been able to work on it or accept that it didn't happen. So I think that's far preferable, like from any player that I've ever spoken to. You just want to know where you are realistically, and that's massive. But so we're gonna move on and talk a little bit about the AOZ. I keep going to call it the AOZ just because it's probably how the most people who listen to this would call it. But no, AOZ. We'll stick to our guns. So you guys win gold, bagging the only guaranteed spot in Paris through a very tough group. You guys, Japan, Iran, Korea, if we're correct. When you see that group coming out, what are your thoughts? Are you thinking happy days, easier crossover? Or are you thinking, God, let's get there first?
Oh, look, bit of history for you. We've never lost that tournament, the AOZ. We've never lost it. So I didn't want to be the first coach going over and losing it. And not only losing it, not qualify for the games. And that pressure wasn't lost on the group. And I get goosebumps because, I got to play in some big games and do some special stuff. But that win in the final, and just to see the reaction of the guys, you really saw how much it meant to them, and how much pressure they are under to win that, to get that spot. And I mean, Iran, they're tough, they're big, they're physical. Like, you play Iran and the boys feel it for a couple of days after. Japan were up and about, completely different team. They just leak out off everything, and they're quick, and they just want to, it's just all about chair pressure for, up and down the court. And then Korea, you just don't know what you're going to get on each day. You look at the third and fourth playoff, they beat Japan.
People forget as well, but Korea damn near slipped past you guys in the semi-final, right? I think you beat them by 4 or 5 points in the end, which as soon as the finals played, that kind of thing gets forgotten about. But That was a close one, man. You didn't sail your way into the final by any
Oh,
means.
not at all. Oh, and we look, we only beat Japan by a point in the first game. So, it looked that everyone used to give us a bit of lip. They used to stir us up. A lot of the opposition teams from over in Europe and that talking about how easy the AOZ pool used to be. And we're like, well, it's not easy at all. And it's testament to the IWF Asia zone. Like, even Thailand's trying to, get better. They have every second tournament they get going and go okay. But yeah, those four teams, Korea, Australia, Japan, and Iran, like, you're going to be in for a hard game each time you play them. So it was really satisfying to get through. It's going to make it interesting in the repechage. And like, Japan go from winning silver in Tokyo to now missing out on the Worlds and the Paris. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see where they end up.
Yeah, if we were feeling controversial, we would accuse them of that silver in Tokyo being a fluke. But we'll tactfully sidestep that one, I
Yeah,
think.
I'm not sure you can say that's true. I think you kind of have to earn a Paralympic medal. Well, I don't. I just hand out water, but like,
I don't
I
mean
mean,
that.
teams do.
But yeah, I think
We
we
call them, just to be politically correct, you call those teams a smoky, right? Someone gets on a run, and I think, you look at Spain in 2016, right? They had a hell of a tournament come out of nowhere and, turn wheelchair basketball upside down with playing four mobile bigs. So, yeah, there's one team in every tournament.
Yeah, no, you're not
Interested
wrong.
to see who it is in this one. It's probably less likely because there's only eight teams in the next Paralympics, which is kind of sad because I love the like 14th team out of 16 coming out of nowhere and being like, what the is happening here? But anyway, so these games, I think the last games were pretty similar. If I remember the final before this one in the AOZ, the game went to 40s or 50s. I think it's partly climate, maybe it's play style. Like, you guys are pretty tough defensively, so are Japan. But a lot of low scoring single digit victories in all of those big games for you. Was it like a point of emphasis for you guys to get back to being really sound defensively, or was it like a, hey, we're struggling to score, let's
No,
knuckle down?
well, look, I alluded at the start, right? I'm not going to shy away from the fact because, I mean, anyone can go and get and look at the results. We're looking to trying to make we're trying to make adjustments to the scoring, so we need to be able to score more. We're lucky that we can defend pretty well, but halfway through the tournament, we realised we had a bit of an issue there, so we just had an intervention. Like I said, I can get up there and jump up and down and tell the boys, what to do, but you need buy-in. So we just had a round table discussion and said, well, how are we going to fix it? This is the issue. This is the problem. Here's the data behind it. How do you guys want to fix it? These are our ideas behind it. What's going to work best? And we're able to make a big adjustment about three or four games in, and that really tightened up our defense for us and enabled us to be able to get out there. But also, both Korea and Iran and changed up their game plan against us and how they were defending us. And in the final, they plumped that big fella, the big double amp, right in the middle of the keyway. And it took us a little while to work it out, but look, the pleasing thing for me was the way we went into that tournament forced teams to adjust to how they were going to play us, and sort of gave us a really good opportunity to then see what we needed to work on.
Sweet.
You've probably touched on it there from this is a more intangibles question than the fact that you've got your Paris qualification nailed down and everything. The success from that level is clear to anyone who looks at it, but for you and for the group, what would you say you guys accomplished or gained or learned from that tournament that sets you up well for the end of this cycle and going forward?
Oh, I think just the belief to know now that, we do have, all the right tools in terms of playing personnel. By no means is the team that qualified the team that'll get to Paris. I've made that quite clear.
You've just ticked off our next question on our list there.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Yeah, we won't select our team until the last possible moment, I think, which is early July. So you just got to build that pressure, create that pressure amongst the players, and you don't want to be caught, not doing the right thing. But if you're not putting in any on your game. Because like it's eight teams, it's the best eight teams in the world. It's going to be so weird. Like there's not going to be an easy game at the game. So literally the best eight teams at this any given time are going to be there. I'll talk about the Repechage later. But you look at like a Colombia. If they got on a roll, they're a frantic team, right? They could easily. So that's the thing with us. We keep everyone honest, keep everyone accountable to doing the right thing to move forward. And, hopefully, once we get there, we'll have the best 12 to be able to move forward.
Yeah, you talk about keeping everyone accountable and keeping tabs on everyone. So obviously after that, everyone goes their separate ways. Half your team's over here in Europe, the other half are in Australia. How do you go about keeping up with people and keeping tabs? I'm sure you have a lot of games to watch. How do you guys kind of keep that moving forward when you're apart?
Yeah, the coaches watch a lot of the games. It's really good now, isn't it? Like with streaming on the YouTube, we can watch a lot of the games, and so that's been good, keeping tab on it. Obviously, we're over here in Belgium now. Come together, we've got running a training camp for the first couple of days, and then we've got a couple of practice matches on the Thursday before we get into the tournament. So it's a different way of doing things. We're just got to be we just got to make every second count when we're together. So before the AOZs, we went into a lock-in camp at a football club in Melbourne that's got an indoor court. And, we just went there for 3 days, 4 days, and, just went green on gold and become a really tight group. And I think that's the thing about, Australian teams is that mateship, and that's something that we really, pride ourselves on, and it's almost having a 13th person. So that's the biggest thing, is just making, we'll only get together now, and then we won't get together again until first week of July, and then we'll be into a staging camp. So we know our time together is limited, but we also are really focused when we come into these camps.
Sure. This is kind of, I guess, the easiest point to bridge into talking about the Repechage tournament, but given what you've just laid out in terms of the schedule and the fact you're in Belgium just now, do you feel like, having avoided the Repechage and having to qualify at this late stage, do you feel like you guys have struck the sweet spot a little bit in that you've got this friendly tournament to work on your stuff, but you don't have the monumental pressure of, some of these teams that you're in Belgium with, France, Germany, Italy, whoever's there, they're going to have to do this and then saddle up again in a couple of weeks' time for real this time in the middle of the season. You guys must be so relieved to not have to worry about what falls out of this friendly tournament in the same way that they do.
Yeah, and it's also like dealing with club sides and trying to do the right thing, players playing in their club side versus, being let go for the, we had a few issues with getting to the AOZ with a few of the players. So you try and do the right thing by the club sides, but also, you need to run your, the national program. So that's always been tricky for us. So, we're very wary of that. And throw in the fact that, if you go to that Repechage, like, geez, it comes down to that one game, right? So, it doesn't matter which way you look at it. There's going to be tough games in those quarterfinal crossovers. So I think we have got a really, definitely the best preparation for us. And also coming from Australia, it's not easy trying to just logistically move guys around. It's really expensive. And so when you do come to Europe, you want to be able to get the most out of it. So if you're going to the Repechage and you couldn't really try anything new, or, you just had to go in there and get it done, pretty grateful that we can get here to Belgium, to Blankensberg. I think it's 19 years this tournament's been going now. So, to be able to get over here, we've taken the option of being in a hotel so we can have a training camp, and we wouldn't have been able to do that before, right? So if we had the Repechage, and then, we got guys that have got full-time jobs. So trying to do the right thing by everyone. And like I said, logistically, it would have been a bit of a nightmare having to go to the Repechage. So this way there's we get to concentrate on, getting better than what we were at the AZs, which is why we're here.
Do you ever think about how much money that 2-point win against Iran must have saved your guys' program in the long term?
Oh yeah, like honestly, because we would have been the repechage, we would have probably had to come to. So we were already planning on coming to Blankensberg or to another tournament, staying and then going to the. Because you it's like flying over, flying back, it's a nightmare. So I think even getting here was about 28 hours or 29 hours or something this time around. So to have to stay here for close to 20 days on top of doing a 20 almost 20 days for the qualification tournament in Thailand. It starts to put a lot of pressure on the individual players as well. And I think what I was going to say to you about Thailand before too, like one of the reasons why the games are low is half the time the teams are playing with three or four people crook, like that have got, upset stomachs or whatever it is. Like, yeah, you don't realize like how much it is difficult conditions to get there and spend 2 weeks there and play. So yeah, it's all also a war of attrition of just getting through those tournaments.
Yeah, you're playing in a sauna as well, by the sounds of things. But yeah, so
Before we move on to the repechage, I'll thank you for your diplomatic phrasing of upset stomachs, because that could have easily gone another way that we would have had to put a long bleep sound effect into.
disability sport played in Thailand. I think it's implied, but yeah.
They do run, and what I will say is Mr. B runs, he does a good show, he puts on a good show, and it is good, but it's just the conditions are tough.
Sure, of course. All right. But yeah, moving on to a tournament that is in probably ideal conditions in the south of France. We will crack through a little bit of repside stuff very quickly because we know you have other places to be, better things to do. So yeah, 12th to the 15th of April. Group A is Germany, Italy, Colombia, and Morocco. Group B is the Netherlands, Iran, Canada, and France. The top four teams are advancing to Paris. So basically, it's all on a quarterfinal game. Everyone qualifies to a quarterfinal, and then you're basically fighting for. So your first three games are for seeding. This is the first time this has happened, obviously. Do you like it? Do you think it's good for the sport?
Oh, look, it's put pressure on in terms of, a lot of the programs around the world don't have a lot of money. So, to have to throw in another, tournament where you have to go to make it does make it hard, I think, on that side. But on the flip side, you will have the current best eight teams in the world. And I think, if you look at it that way, there's no I think the tournament is going to be one of the best tournaments in terms of games played. But I like having the pool rounds and the quarters and stuff, and a couple of people dropping out. But yeah, I think this way, the you're gonna it's pure in the sense you're gonna get the best eight teams at any at that time. So yeah.
Yeah, it's essentially a long-winded funneling down process for the to really siphon off who is the best of the best. But yeah, I think you can probably say the jump down from 12 teams to 8 teams means probably no serious contenders are going to miss out, but it does, as James mentioned a minute ago, it kind of reduces the likelihood of, random team, Dark Horse Team X goes on a run because everybody is kind of, in that top bracket almost. But I think it definitely has its upsides, definitely has its downsides. I'm interested to know, Brad, if you think, so obviously we talked about how tough it would have been for you and your guys had you had to factor in the repechage tournament to the middle of, you would have ended up in a situation where you played a major tournament in January, a tournament in April, and then a Paralympics in kind of August, September, which is a hellacious schedule, factoring in, like you said, guys' club seasons and guys with like real world jobs and all that stuff. But do you think is there any flip side of it where these teams are tearing each other apart and staying in competition state, and meanwhile, GB have been sat around with their ticket punched since September last year, and it's going to be all, they're almost going to be coming into the battle cold while everybody else is,
Are you bringing
is.
us into it?
Well, that's just an
Like, come on, man.
GB and Spain, let's say, who qualified through the Euros last September, have had almost a year off while everyone else has, worked up a sweat more recently, shall we say?
Thanks.
I look, I'm not gonna, I agree. Coming through the AZ, tough tournament, playing tough games, and then we come here to Blankensburg, Iran, they're going to learn from what happened to them at the AZs, and then they're coming into a repechage. I think they're going to be a real handful, and I expect them to get through. So then all of a sudden they've now played sort of 13, 14 really tough games before they go in. So I think on one side of it, it's it is it's a it's a real pressure there to get the teams to these tournaments, and and then but if you get through, then you've got the added advantage of actually going and playing some really tough tournament games. So I don't know if I'd want to be sitting around for a year, but then again, it comes into what games people can, what sort of tournament stuff that you can get invited to, into the lead up. I'm personally, whether we play, a lot of games in that real that just before Christmas, we put the feelers out, but we've had success by not playing anyone and just going and doing green on gold in a closed camp, and then going in and just sort of hit the ground running, maybe pick up a hit up one out in the village before, like a day before. But for us, there's definitely been no winning formula. When we've podiumed, it's always been through a different scenario. So I think the best thing about it is we know that whether we get games or not, we're okay. But I think there's an advantage of playing some good tournaments in the sort of 6, 7 months leading in.
Sure. From watching, I mean, from thinking about this, is it the sort of tournament that you'll be watching to kind of get a head on scouting, or is it like, I'll let these guys take lumps out of each
At the
other?
River Charge.
Pardon?
Oh, I'm going to fly home and then fly back to France on, after 8 days. I'll be sitting in the stands watching every game. So,
Really?
oh, bloody oath. You just pick up so much more. Some of the feeds off the streaming can, the play will be going up the other end, and you'll be still watching the replay of the ball going through the hole.
Yeah.
And look, love technology and love what they're doing with it, but we need a little bit of work on the videoing.
Yeah,
But
they're
yeah, no, I'll
misusing it.
be,
Yeah.
yeah, I'll be definitely, courtside. And the other thing is, it's just building relationships with other teams, and meeting the different coaches and managers, etc. And it is a little community that we've got. So just being able to touch base with people in the face to face, and helps you organize things down the track. So like Italy, for example, like just the relationship that I've got with Carlo, that was a big thing for us in September, going over to the Julian Over tournament. Shout out to all the Italians. Thank you for the hospitality. But just going over there as a national team and playing club sides, and playing against guys like Dirk Pasiwan, and saying to the young guys, like, don't take you off him, he'll drop 40 on you. And they're looking at him going, no, that's not going to happen. And next minute he comes off with back-to-back games of 50, and
Yeah.
it's
Where it's
just
just like, trust me, this guy doesn't need to see the basket. Also, what this sounds like to me is on either end of a season, you've had a company credit card pay for a trip to the north of Italy and the south of France. That's what that sounds like to me. So you've absolutely nailed it, and I respect
oh
you for
yeah, yes.
it.
But yeah, that Italy one was good for us. It was a good reset, and good opportunity for the guys to just go and play some ball and get towed up by some club sides, which always dents you as a national program. But yeah, it was a good learning curve for us, and it gave our young guys a good opportunity to say that there's so many players around the world that can play the game now. So it was good exposure for them.
Yeah, it's always funny to me when national teams scrimmage against club teams that are playing to 16.5 points and they don't quite understand why things aren't working like they should. Like, you go to throw the ball inside 2-1 and you're like, oh, wait, no, it's real dark in there against club sides. But yeah, sorry, just to make sure we're not keeping you,
No,
how
you're right.
quickly do you need to get out of here? Like, do you
No,
have five
we're good.
minutes?
We're good.
Cool. All right.
We'll throw you a couple of quick fires then, before we get to dishing out the heat. But in terms of this repercharge field, few quick questions. Do you think there's anybody in here who is head and shoulders that you would guarantee getting through? Do you think there's a dark horse who just might sneak through? And do you think there is somebody in here who, although maybe not a heavy favorite, you look at and you think, oh, it'd be nice if, from an Australian perspective, they got knocked out at this stage and we didn't have to deal with them down the line?
Oh, I've got to be careful what I say now, don't I? Look, Dark Horse, I think Colombia. I watched them in the Americas, and they're a tough unit. And your classic South American teams in any sport, they get a win up early and they get a roll on. Confidence. You're only playing 3 or 4 games and you're done and dusted. So I think the thing I like about this Repechage tour, and a lot of the, when you go to a Worlds, there's, say the, 10 through 16, they're good teams, but they fade because they just maybe not have the bench. They don't go deep enough to be able to get them through a tournament. So this is going to be, this is like literally come out swinging and you just got to keep throwing punches until you knock out the opposition, right? So it's definitely not going 12 rounds. And so I think Colombia have got a good opportunity there to upset some people. I just think Iran's going to be too strong. I just think if they come with the mindset of that, they're just going to dominate. I think teams will find it really tough to just to control that size that they've got. Like they're just a big team.
I'm very big on Iran generally. I really like their team, but I think one thing in this field, one thing that gets lost is they obviously the last World Championships, they went through a very tough group where they were in with both GB and the USA. And I think we talk about results getting forgotten, once the tournament's ended, but they squeaked their way through. I think they beat Germany by 2 points and then beat France by one. I might be slightly off on those numbers. So I think it's tough to say they're head and shoulders above anybody. I think they are maybe the best team there, and they're obviously the world bronze medalists, but I think it goes to show that field is not a guaranteed path for anybody, right? If their previous run-ins with those teams have been as close as they have been.
Yeah, and look, I don't wish anyone not to make it. I've got there's probably a history with Canada, like they've taken all the golds off me. So, but you got Mateo and obviously Paddy's back, and there's a couple of lads there. There's some good fellas in that team that, they're real good. Mateo's a good mate. So, look, I just it's I don't I hope they all can, wish they could all go through, but obviously they're not. So. All I know is it's going to be a really good tournament. I'm stoked that I'm going to get to see it live. I think it's going to be some good basketball there.
On the flip side of you being there for scouting purposes, you're obviously there to learn everything you can about the opposition. Do you think, from the standpoint of the teams that are taking part, are they going to be able to strike the balance of, doing what it takes to get it done and to qualify, but without really overplaying their hand for these teams that are lying in wait? How would it's impossible for me to ask you how you would strike that balance because you're not in this situation, but do you think,
No,
obviously, you're at an advantage
I've thought
having.
about it a lot. I don't think you can. I don't think you can't go there and just you need to go there and win. So you can't. I don't. You would kick yourself if you didn't qualify, knowing that you could have played a different way or you had something else. You really got to go, and they're just going to have to go. Like I said, it's literally. It's like a cage fight. You've got. You don't have a lot of time, and you need to hit the ground running as soon as you get there and get a win on the board and get the confidence up. Because really, I mean, you finish top, even if whoever finishes fourth are not going to be an easy team. But once you finish second, third, the crossover is going to be just won't matter. It's going to be a hard game, and I think you're going to see some at least one upset game in that quarter final for sure.
That leads us on perfectly to our very next question, actually, which is, given that it's by the time you get to the quarterfinal game, it's all or nothing, win or go home. Do you think this is a little bit geared too heavily towards rewarding teams that might have one or two guys who can get hot for the random game here? Or do you think that's just the nature of the beast?
No, it's the nature of the beast, right? And I'd love. I mean, if a player can get hot and win a game, bloody good on him, I reckon. It's like that's what I actually was saying to the boys. I'm actually interested in seeing the like when that final siren goes and just watching one team celebrate and one team just have their world shattered. That's why we watch sport. So I've been on the receiving end and been on of both sides of it, so I know what it feels like. And that's the emotion that keeps everyone coming back, and Yates striving to get better, and next to the next time that you do qualify.
Sure.
I wonder, and I'd love to see it. Like, as soon as they announced this tournament, me and Mark got very excited, because if there's one thing we love more than great basketball, it's like the mid-level of like evenly matched teams. Because you kind of take off the very top of like teams that'll blow out the mid-range teams, and you take out the bottom of teams that you kind of don't want to watch. So we love that it's going to be a bloodbath. But I wonder if a team's just going to go three group games. They're going to play everyone 20 minutes. Like, they're going to rotate. They're going to bring everyone in and out, and they're just going to throw everything into like, right, everyone's kind of going. Everyone feels good. No one's hurt. No one's tired. You have to win one game. It's like, is it worth it? Like, if it's that sort of, there's no real mismatch. Like, no one's dying to finish top of their group, so they cross over against, I'm not going to name a team because that's disrespectful, but like,
I don't
everyone has
necessarily
them.
think that's true, because in the one group, they'll be fighting out for the chance to play Morocco, who presumably will finish fourth in the other group, right? That is the closest thing to an easy game we're going to see. So
Sure. Yeah.
that first spot in the opposite group is valuable in itself. But to our point about the guys being able to carry you home, Brad, you must have been looking at that. Had you been in this situation of you guys having to qualify, you must have been getting that quarterfinal game and being like, hey, this would be a good day for a vintage Tristan Knowles performance, or a vintage Sean Norris game or whatever.
Yep.
Fortunately, you don't have to put up with it, but it's the kind of thing where I see Nico Juancet from France is like the ultimate. Could they be matched up against a team much stronger than them? Probably. Could he win it on his own and it won't matter? Yeah, also probably. And he damn near did it to the Netherlands in the Euros last year, right? So it's gonna be lethal by the time we get there. On which note, we've saved it for last, but do you want to predict your four teams that are gonna make it through the repechage and join you guys in Paris?
No, I think I've said Iran. I've got to stick with my dark horse, Colombia. I think the Netherlands will be there. And then the last one, only because I love them and I spend a lot of time there, I reckon Italy's going to come out, and Bizzetti's going to be a beast and just out push everyone down the court. So
Damn.
they're my four. I wouldn't put a bet on it, but yeah, bit of love. Bit of a dark horse, and I think two teams there that have probably got enough firepower to safely get through.
So for people keeping score at home, you're leaving Morocco, Canada, France, and Germany to watch the games from
Yeah, and I hope that doesn't come back to bite me. Apologies to any of those four clubs out there. I'm definitely not basing it all on form. As I said, there's a bit of love there, and I just think it's gonna, like, to be honest, like, it's gonna literally be a flip of the coin in a couple of those games. I think they're gonna be, I'm not expecting blowouts.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Okay. We're going to call it there. We're away. You've got stuff to be on with next. So thank you very much for joining us, man. Great to have you back. And yeah, good luck with this friendly tournament, and good luck with everything going forward. And we hope I don't know what you might get promoted to when we have you back in 2 years' time, but
Probably a
czar of
retirement
wheelchair
village.
basketball
Prime
Australia.
Minister.
And yeah, who knows? But mate, I'll be looking forward to seeing the bench unit episode of the Paralympics and who you give the belt to from the Paralympics. I think there's no MVP, so we might just have to get around you fellas to make the belt the unofficial MVP of the Paris. Hey, what do you reckon?
The people's MVP. Oh man.
If you put on a coaching masterclass, it could well be yours, man. Or we could
thank you.
hand it
Thank
off
you,
to
guys.
Brett Stibnes if we thought he was really the mastermind behind all of this.
Yeah, well, I can't give away all my secrets, but yeah.
That'd be great. One of the Aussie players comes off the bench and makes a load of threes in a big game, and we give the belt to Brett for the inspiration.
There you go.
But yeah. All right, man. Thanks for being here.
Thank you,
Really
guys.
appreciate
Thanks
it.
for having me on, and keep up the good work. Love it.
All
Cheers,
the
mate.
best. Thank you
Thanks
very
everyone
much.
for listening. Talk to you next week. Bye.